conserve a little time. We've been chatting up here about how to do this, and we've decided that we'd best work in vacuum, since that's the way this one operates best. I'm sure that most of you ladies and gentlemen already know Paul Fanning. Paul's been around here for off and on for quite a time. Perhaps some of you have not yet met Mr. Miller, Jay Miller. Jay is from Seattle. He's an engineer with Boeing. They started discussing with each other last night over the pool table, I understand. It's a very bad place for Jay to meet Paul. The general problem of the Pentagon Papers and what the issues were, and they found out that they held somewhat different points of view, and thought it might be interesting to air that discussion here. I think it is a very critical kind of an issue to make, and I won't preempt on their time to say why I think it's critical, but I assume that everyone here is here because you probably share the same kind of a feeling. No one of the three of us feel that we're in the position to make a factual statement about just what has happened and where we are at the moment. Each of us probably has read somewhat the same releases, and perhaps we are in general confusion about the situation, but if our confusion is somewhat comparable, maybe that's good enough to start with anyway. In Paul's absence a few moments ago, Jay and I decided that it would be nice to have Paul start the discussion.
Oh,
so Paul, you are now on.
I come fully prepared. I was studying my Luther script just before I got here. Well, just as an icebreaker, let me inform all of you that Jay and I are both on the same side. It should spark the discussion. We are both on the same side. Neither one of us are Lutherans. So that's about all I think of for the moment. Maybe Jay would like to say something.
All right. Well, I think first I owe you a little of my background so you'll know how to take any remarks I might make. As Vern has said, I work for the Boeing Company. I'm a hired hand. And what I do there is military operations analysis. Mostly that doesn't mean anything to anybody except the term military. But operations analysis is concerned with questions like, given that I can put together a system half a dozen different ways, what are the advantages and disadvantages of doing it this way or this way or this way or this way? Or given that I have a system, somebody's already created it and it's in being, how should I operate it to get the most out of it? Or given that I can do something, what's it worth to do it? And these are kind of general questions that operations analysis people address. If there are questions that are raised in connection with military systems, then it becomes military operations analysis. And that's what I do. I think you should know that I've never been in the military, even though I lived through the Second World War. But I have had some contact with the people in the military and the people in the Pentagon. Excuse me. You should know that I haven't read the Pentagon Papers, and I haven't read the Supreme Court decision, and I haven't read any of the discussion in the newspapers about the pros and cons of releasing the Pentagon Papers. Now that you know that, let me make a correction of fact. Paul and I were not shooting pool. We were on our way to the Vesper service when we stumbled over the Pentagon Papers.
Well, this poses immediately the issue of credibility, and that's involved in this discussion. So.
Should we dismiss now?
Very good. Very good. I don't really know very much about anything, so I'll try to cover up for that by being honest, which means to me that I'm going to say what I think rather than what I think you will accept or would like to hear. So please forgive me if I appear to be treading on your toes. I'm trying to be your friend. And as a result of the talk that Paul and I had, it seemed to me the question eventually boiled down to the very hard one. Eventually, a person has to make a decision as to what he's going to do when the outcome, the ultimate consequences, are not clear. It's very uncertain as to what he ought to do. Even with all the guidance that we have from the Bible, from the Christian teaching, all the guidance we have from man's history, his accumulated experience, all the guidance you can get from whatever knowledge you have of the physical laws, you're still in doubt. Should I do that, or should I do that? Should I stand up and fight, or should I turn the other cheek? Which is better from the Christian point of view? It's unclear. Yet you have to make a decision. And having made the decision, there is no chance to take the other course if this course turns out to be not right. And incidentally, that's what life is all about. Making decisions in the face of uncertainty and then living with it. Well, the question of war boils down to that. And I think that sometimes it is right to stand up and fight. I agree 100% with Mr. Churchill when he said the Second World War was the unnecessary war, simply because nobody was willing to stand up and fight Hitler at a time when he could have been stopped with very small loss of life. And because nobody had the guts or the wisdom to make that kind of decision, go ahead and fight, we had the whole Second World War. I think that our presidents, starting with Eisenhower, Kennedy, Johnson, now Nixon, I guess I'll have to leave out Nixon. Eisenhower, Kennedy, and Johnson. I think they probably made a correct decision to make a stand in South Vietnam. I think that the way they have implemented the decision that they made has been far less than perfect. But I do feel deep inside me that they made the right decision. Well, that's a long way from the Pentagon Papers. But it seemed to me that's the kind of question that eventually comes out of consideration of the Pentagon Papers when viewed in the Christian context. No. At first, Paul and I got hung up on who should have the power, who should have the right and duty to decide what is classified information. You know, that question kind of went away from me in a little while, because the guy that has the information is the one that classifies. If he decides he's not going to pass that information on, that's the end of it, you know, whether you like it or not.
That might be a nice place to get a response to that. And Paul, I suggest when you respond to it that you try and divide your comments, if you feel inclined, in two directions. One is, who does the classifying? If you feel like responding to that, And secondly, is that the issue here, or are we really talking about when the classification has been broken by somebody, rightfully or wrongfully? How about the availability of the information which has been disclosed, rightfully or wrongfully?
Oh, you gentlemen are making things too easy for me. Now, first I have been told what my Seattle friend thinks I ought to think, and then I have been told how Vern Rickey thinks I ought to say what I ought to think. So now that you all know what I'm going to say, all I have to do is sit back and hear you say it. Let's see, how are we going to come at this? Yes, there's a lot of uncertainty about the decisions all of us make. I'm reminded of a little thing that I read one time. The reason I read it was because I wrote it. You know, you have to read what you write because nobody else will. It was entitled The Haves Have Nots, K-N-O-T-S. The title was developed in this way: those of us who are in faith are continually have knots in our faith, that is tension. That makes us uneasy, that makes us take actions that are not quite completely thought out. There's an element of a leap in all our actions and all our decisions. This must have been present in Ellsworth. This must have been present in Bonhoeffer. In spite of all the thinking that he wrote down on paper, there's still this tension, the haves, have nots, K-N-O-T-S. They act in a tension of part certainty and part uncertainty. There's a tension like the tension in a guitar string. We never do anything because we're sure. Yes, we're never sure who should classify the information. It has been said that the one who has the information should classify it. So this probably first starts with the GI in the trenches in Vietnam. He has the information already. He probably got it right in the middle of his guts. But somehow it gets a little bit classified before it's reported to his superior officer, who again classifies it again before he reports it to the general. And there's a lot of additional classifications from the people who have the original information before they get to the Pentagon, probably screened through the State Department somehow or other. So maybe when it gets to the people who really make the decisions, like Eisenhower or Kennedy or Johnson or our, what's the name of our present president? Oh yes, Nixon. And I mentioned all these names to remind us of what we all know. All these men have had a part in accumulating this information that Mr. Ellsworth purloined from the Pentagon. So we accumulate a lot of information, and it finally reaches the men at the top in a form so that he sees through a tremendously dark glass, and each person in turn acts probably on a lot of misinformation, and this accumulated irrelevant information and misinformation is withheld from the public by some fiat at the Pentagon level. The papers, there's probably no question but what in purloining the Pentagon papers that Ellsworth was guilty of a crime. A felony, I assume. I hope I'm using the right word. Correct me at any time. It's considered important.
You never get to talk.
With this, I'm inspired by this vote of confidence, Vern. This is how he beats me at pool all the time. He talks me under the table. Where were we? Oh, yes. Ellsworth was very aware that he was committing a felony. And he's already said, I'm guilty, I did it, go ahead and put me in jail. I did this knowing that I would probably be put in jail because my conscience told me this is something that had to be done. The courts have already shown that the information that Ellsworth released was not damaging to the national safety, that the national safety was not put in jeopardy by the information that was published in the papers and released to them by Ellsworth. The information released simply showed all the hollowness of what has been going on, showed that a lot of important people in high places were concealing their blunders from the public, and that we were continually going from one blunder to another in Vietnam. Ellsworth had been acquainted with this situation for years during his work for the RAND Corporation, a Santa Monica corporation, by the way. I must remind the Santa Monica Chamber of Commerce to pay me more. They haven't paid me much yet. But all important things, I assure you, come from Santa Monica. Paul Fanning's the only exception. Where were we? You have to make this connected. I've been instructed.
Paul, I would like to connect something at this point, if I may.
You'd like to connect my foot to my mouth?
No, maybe. We see. I have not read the Supreme Court decision on this. Maybe somebody in this room has. Mm-hmm.
The brief dissertation on it in last week's Time magazine that outlined pretty much what the justices had to say about it.
See, Paul's comment a moment ago, and see if this is, you test it then, if you've read it for us, summarization of it. Paul says the Supreme Court decided that the release of these papers had not put the nation in jeopardy. Yep. I'm not so sure that this is true. My suspicion is that the Supreme Court said that, balancing the interests involved here. I repeat once more, I haven't read it, so I don't know.
Although my stock went up tremendously here because I told my daughter in advance how the court would split and who would write which opinions. When it came out right, I made her a believer anyway.
My suspicion is that the majority said that balancing the interest involved, that the interest of disclosure overbalanced the hazards of that disclosure. It was the freedom of speech, the First Amendment. Is that?
In essence, that's what it broke down to. Three justices said absolutely yes, absolute freedom of the press in all circumstances. Three justices on the other end of the spectrum said absolutely no in classification materials, and three were dead center that it just depended on the situation. You had to weigh the balance. That there was some precedence to not revealing things, and the newspapers in certain circumstances didn't have the right to publish things that weren't releasable, but other things, if it didn't really affect national security, yes, they could publish it, and that's the way the vote. It was two spectrums and one, three in the middle.
So we come right down to a situation, ethics situation. Ellsworth had worked in this confidential area for many years, and he finally had had it right up to here and felt that the public interests were being endangered by the withholding of information, by the failure to publish the boo-boos which led to wrong decisions, which pyramided, in fact, and led from one blunder to a greater one, by each blunder being based on something prior which had occurred, which was a false result of a previously false bit of information. And he felt that the public was entitled to know, so that this sort of a breeder reactor situation of error built upon error would collapse when it became known. So he acted, knowing that in all situations, other than a situation like this, he might be a Benedict Arnold. And in this situation, he felt that he was being a public servant. We have an exact parallel here between all the tensions under which Bonhoeffer lived. I know that we can't say that people should at all times steal papers from the Pentagon and at all times feed them to the newspapers. This is impossible. It would be madness. We do need some censorship to guard the national interest. I do feel that in this particular situation, in view of what the two courts have held, and in view of what has been published, it appears that the clamor which has been aroused may reverse the pyramiding of errors which seems to have been going on in Vietnam, and will deflate some of the bureaucratic arrogance which has built up in the Pentagon and in high circles in Washington, D.C., at the expense of the people, at the expense of public knowledge, at the expense of freedom of the press. Amen.
All right, now let's give Jay a chance to react to this, and then with your consent, we'll open it to comments from the floor on this issue. And let me try once more to indicate what I see as a double issue that both Jay and Paul are talking about. And to do that perhaps most efficiently, Jay, I could use an analogy to your business. Suppose that Boeing aircraft is developing a secret process of great significance, and that you feel that it's so significant that Boeing ought not to have it alone. And you are just really persuaded that Boeing ought not to be keeping that secret to its own corporate processes. It's too important to the country. Now, at this point, is the issue, should you, out of this conviction, release the information? That's one issue. Was Ellsworth right in saying that this was so important that the rules laid down for him by the corporate United States, corporate Boeing, ought to be ignored and ought to be released? That's one issue. The other issue is, when that information is disclosed, and the original owner of the information, the United States Boeing aircraft, reaches out and tries to recapture it, should the legal processes then say, all right, it ought properly to be recaptured? So we have one issue, the propriety of the release. The other one is the recapturability after it's been turned loose.
Well, I'll say right off the bat, I don't think your analogy is very good. Your analogy involves the idea of corporate profit. And it doesn't include the notion of community good or general welfare of the populace. At least it seems that way to me.
One could think that Boeing aircraft has more to do with my prosperity in life than King County. But then we'll pass that issue.